goes, there's one complication that arises from murder being included, because murder is now a life sentence. Is there some sort of a time period that the committee wants to set on a murder, which otherwise, it's a specially designated offense? If you made it subject to the same provisions, then PSRB would not be able to discharge an aggravated murder person for 20 or 30 years, but they would not be able to discharge a murder person possibly for life. Well, actually, it's not addressed at all, but that's the issue.
No.
163115 doesn't. Murder under 163115 is not made a Class A felony. The subsection 3 of that section says a person convicted of murder shall be punished by imprisonment for life. Because you've set time limits for, you know, in felony sex offenses, or if they're Class A or Class B, it's going to be 20 or 10 year maximum, that they will retain jurisdiction over the person who would otherwise have been found guilty. In murder, you've got a life sentence. In aggravated murder, we chose...
Right, 30 years.
The minimum.
30, 20. Maximum. Court to sets a mandatory minimum term under a life sentence. I don't know.
Mandatory minimums are usually for half of the imposed sentence, yeah. And then they get half. I'm not sure how they.
Well, are you saying, Linda, that we should perhaps set an outside time limit?
Well, it would seem it would be the only one for which there was no maximum, no minimum period for which the PSRB would have to retain jurisdiction whether the person met the test or otherwise be discharged.
It actually doesn't make sense to simply put it in there, well, it doesn't get offenses unless, right? They simply would discharge him upon filing.
Well, otherwise they would meet the test and be discharged when the PSRB
right.
determined they met
it's
the
just
test
the way it is
to be
now.
Qualified for, right?
So it's no difference the way it is now. We haven't gained anything by making a designated offense in here unless we come in with some kind of minimal period of time they have to maintain jurisdiction.
Well, let's set a designated time period at 20 years, being the max under a Class A and being the mini max under the aggravated murder.
Yeah, I don't have, well.
I agree with that.
What are you doing again, Representative Lombard, now?
I'm saying for life sentences, let's set a term of 20 years on the jurisdictional issue of the PSRB.
Okay. I was going to say we could track it on 30 to 20, but 20 seems to be much more reasonable than that.
Well, I picked 20 because that's, number one, that's at the lower end
right.
of our aggravated murder minimums, and it's at the upper end of the Class A.
Right, and we've made a policy decision that obviously this form of murder is not as serious or as bad as the aggravated, so I think that tracks well. Representative Lombard moves that, place it in the motion, please, Representative Lombard.
So well, it'll be a condition, or conceptual motion.
Right. Please do so.
That the time period
Linda, you can correct me if I'm wrong, PSRB jurisdiction, maximum jurisdiction, under the specially designated offense of ordinary murder, murder is defined in 163.115, be 20 years.
Just modify it to the extent that it wouldn't necessarily be maximum jurisdiction. I think what you mean is that would be the minimum, that they would have to retain jurisdiction.
Have to retain jurisdiction for that period, yes.
Representative Roberts so moves. Objections to the motion?
Where would that go in the bill, in the draft we have here?
Mr. Chair.
A new C?
We would have to be adding in the murder part in Section 2, and I believe...
8, new C, right?
Right, except that this sort of... The language, like you see in subsection 8 here of section 13, is also repeated for other purposes having to do with the kind of discharge or release a PSRB can be like. For example, on page 17, that has to do with discharge and says that although the PSRB can condition and release a person, in no case shall they discharge a person placed under their jurisdiction for the specially designated offenses until a certain time period is up. So it would have to be added in there. And also, I think Section 15 on the next page 18, has a similar, the same language. I think those are all the places that it would probably have to be added, but I won't swear by that until I go back over there. Under there, the murder would have to be added in Section 2.
Good.
I wanted to point out before I get off this topic, on page 3, section 8, I was looking over that language. I was unable to hook up with legislative counsel in time to see about modifying this. I think that the language, the way it's added here, may be confusing. It makes it sound like following the entry of a judgment of guilty, acceptance, sanity. If the person would have been found guilty of a felony or certain misdemeanors, and if the person was convicted of a specially designated offense, I think that language is somewhat misleading, and I'd like to discuss it further with legislative counsel to try to stay consistent with what I understand to be the subcommittee's intent, but I don't believe it's entirely accurate to say a person's convicted of it because they've been found guilty except for insanity. So if I can express that as my understanding of the subcommittee's intent, and they can give me leeway to work further with legislative counsel if this is going forward to the full committee, I would like them to adjust that and maybe to clarify in that language that what we mean to say is that those persons, if the person is found guilty except for insanity of a specially designated offense, they clearly are going to be put under the jurisdiction of the board. And then would be further dealt with as explained in the other sections.
Well, I think probably you should just repeat the language.
Repeat.
Guilty except.
That's a possible way of amending it. I just don't know if it best fits in right there. Or whether a new sentence, sort of, if that should be taken out and a new sentence should be added in.
Oh, right.
Containing that language.
Fine. I think.
Okay, right.
Section 18 on page 23 of the amendments. The request there was to amend the bill in a way that would make leaving the state all under PSRB jurisdiction, assuming that it was not approved, such that extradition would be available. There was a suggestion by Alicia Kniewacz that we do that by amending the state statute to insert the language about while the person is on conditional release type of language. Legislative Council has provided, you know, not that exact language, but provided that person commits the crime of escape in the second degree if the person escapes either from the correctional facility or while otherwise under the PSRB's jurisdiction, departs from the state without board authorization. Section 19 was a request that the DAs be required to keep a record of how often the insanity defense is raised. After, I think I talked with the council, but it must have not gotten in by the time these amendments were prepared, but we provided that the DA would keep records on information having to do with the assertion. Actually, this is somewhat broader, but it's written in terms of relating to the assertion and trial of mental disease and defect defenses. If the committee's comfortable with it that broad, the subcommittee had asked how often the defense was raised. The blanks are, once the DAs would collect such information, who would collected in some central place, should they be submitting it to someone who will have it on hand. I talked to the chair after the meeting, and he had suggested that we include that information would go into the state court administrator's office. But that had not been adopted by the subcommittee, and I didn't get that information to legislative council.
Questions, comments on that? So that everywhere, the blanks would have state court administrators, is that right, basically?
Well, that was one issue, and the other was that there had been sort of a vague reference that as far as what kind of record should be kept, and that's just a matter of whether you're satisfied with the language on 24 and 25.
Oh. Was this run by Betsy Belcher?
No.
I bet she'd love it. I'm more record keeping. She'd probably come unglued. Where did this amendment come from? Where did this Section 19 come from?
The subcommittee's motion was to include a provision that the district attorneys keep certain information. And one of the issues that keeps coming up is I think Jeff Rogers had brought this up about the controversy that comes up each time as to how often the defense is actually asserted, maybe which prong of the test courts or juries really rely on in finding the person not responsible and so forth, and the amendment was just that the DAs would keep some kinds of records having to do with the assertion of the insanity defense.
All right. Let's see what happens. The chair moves that the state court administrator be designated as a keeper of the records, if you will, Section 19, where appropriate, found there in that section, three different blanks. Is there a discussion on this motion, Section 19, lines 21 through 25, page 23? Objections?
Chairman, I take it we're going to contact her about it.
We'll hear about it. I'm sure if this gets to the full committee, I'm sure that we're going to hear from a number of things in the full committee.
So you dare tell the chair we just tabled it?
We have been working on this, the amendments, Mr. Chair, in your absence.
Apologize to the subcommittee. I'm going to have
We apologize to you. We tabled the whole bit.
So, is that just, then I'll, are we there?
Would you like to summarize it?
Yeah, I will. I just want to find, I need another direction. I need another signal.
On that issue?
Yeah, we're taking, okay, okay.
To include State Court Administrator,
right.
And you want me to ratify Betsy Belshaw before the full committee meeting?
Yeah, I think that, assuming this moves up today for the full committee, that we ought to put that before her so that the full committee, she can come in and go crazy if she wants to in terms of what we did.
Be sure to tell her it's working in court.
I'm not ignoring you. I want to find out what she is doing. We're going to come right to this chair because we've done a comprehensive job here.
Did we say shared between the State Court Administrator and former speakers?
Who are you getting your signals from, Lenny?
I just was asking Felicia whether I left anything out.
Oh, I thought you were asking the AG or the DAs. I didn't want you talking to those two. They're villains in this whole thing.
Front row seats today.
Mr. Chair, we've added several crimes to the designated crimes involving regular murder and some sex offenses we put in there. We took out sexual abuse, all under the tutelage and direction of Representative Hill. We got some troubles on page 3 in that word person, if the person is convicted, that is convicted isn't the way to say it. Conceptually amended that to put proper language along the tracks with guilty except for insanity, you know, that because we did hear from, as you know, mental health is claimed as it is already, that regardless of how we say it, we're still convicting them and they still are guilty. I respectfully dissent from that, but the language that's found on 21 and 22 there basically talks about a conviction as opposed to if the person is found guilty except for insanity. I think that'd be better language, but Linda said that she hadn't had a chance really to get together with legislative counsel to come up with some better language. So we conceptually, through the amendment by Representative Lombard, went along with her direction on that.
Can I interrupt there, Craig? It was my understanding from the testimony that plea, that form of plea, is going to subject us to the loss of the federal funds.
I'm not sure.
Right.
We didn't, if you want to know, I have here from your comments, you want to know. We didn't, you may, if I'm reading you right, we didn't touch the verdict as of this moment, Mr. Chair.
Well,
waiting for your return.
Yeah, we're waiting because Representative Courtney didn't want to touch it, Mr. Chair. I think it's the...
Okay, I'm ready to touch it.
That's all it's left.
And then we did.
Let's go on with everyone else, then we'll come back to that.
Reach out.
And touch it. Reach out and touch something.
This is really not that funny because I know what he's going to do when he touches it. Another thing we did on page 13, Mr. Chair, and we tracked it from thereafter, is we were talking about the jurisdiction, how long the jurisdiction should be named by PSRB, and since we introduced regular murder, we're calling it 163.115, and we don't have any kind of minimal jurisdictional element in the laws exists now. It simply says for life. We added one. What we added was 20 years. We added 20 years, and that was through the amendment by the Representative Lombard. So if it's 163.115 that your conviction or your whatever it is comes under, then you got 20 years. The PSRB can maintain the jurisdiction. We tracked that on through, and then I think the final thing we did, if I'm not mistaken, Linda, is on page 23. Is that right? Section 19. And this was at your direction, Mr. Chair. We understood that you had recommended possibly State Court Administrator be used as the collector of the facts as to how often the plea is asserted, how often is it successful, and things like that. So I moved to simply insert State Court Administrator in there in the blanks, recognizing that Betsy Belshaw has not seen this amendment or this section, but I figured she'd catch up with it in full committee. That's how I did it, because I want to get closure on this, Mr. Chair, closure. I was taught that in 1981 by the then speaker. Closure. So that is the word.
It is June the 1st.
And I would move that we, these amendments to House Bill 2075 as drafted and as set out specifics as well as in concept, Mr. Speaker.
We already voted on those, Peter.
Did we?
You adopted those.
I thought they were those. No, did we do it specifically or conceptually?
Well, either you were banging your gavel for joys or...
No, I was banging the gavel to the amendments on the amendments. Now I'm moving the amendments as amended, both specific and in concept, Representative Lombard, be to the original bill, House Bill 2075.
Let's just do it so we can... Well, I get it. The chair would like to reach out and touch something.
I realize the chair
Okay, well, let's clear the decks of any unresolved amendments and then come to the question of the plea. Is there objection to the amendments as amended? Apparently. I take the hint.
Can we take a vote on that?
Now, my view on the plea or the verdict is that in the face of the projected loss of those funds, either we have to do one of two things as a committee. Either we go back to the present or some variant of the present verdict which does not pose that same threat, or we have to subsequently refer the bill to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair?
There is, I guess, a third option, which is we ignore the division of the report.
Yes. Mr. Chair?
Have I missed Representative Cordy?
You know, well, where are you in your discussion? You want discussion now?
It's open. Go ahead.
We specifically discussed this with Jeff Rogers. It was his words, which, as you recall, these are his exact words. We went all over the place in this thing. And I don't know, you know, you obviously have bought off on the advice of Walter Berry, and I'm not down on Walter Berry, that, you know, as long as the word guilty's in there, it's came by the door. We're gonzo. But he specifically, if this actual Mike Swain put it in perspective, and I wish he was still here, he didn't like it. He didn't care about the money not coming in from the feds. He didn't like it because of the fact that you're saying the person's guilty. If you remember the logic and the reasonable argument of one Jeff Rogers as to why he chose except for insanity, then we're not talking about a guilty verdict as such. If you say guilty but mentally ill, that's a whole different can of worms. And I suggest that then that Walt Berry and the Mental Health Division is 100,000% right. But why should we simply, at this stage of the game, desert this major reason that even got us into this whole thing? This is one of the keys that got us into this whole ball field, into the arena, into the stadium. Was this... Are you listening to me?
Yeah.
Was this... this
okay, not...
not guilty thing. I really mean that. In a sense that you made a mockery, if you will, out of the insanity plea, because you're putting jurors in a situation where, they, like it or not, the ring of not guilty is just abhorrent in the face of certain types of crime, even though we may legitimately have an individual who's loony as a fruit kid. So I guess I'm not willing to desert the effort and the logic and the thinking of one Jeff Rogers at this stage of the proceedings, only because we may lose some federal funds. I am not convinced at this stage that his operative language would cease the influx of these federal funds. I'm just not convinced.
I'm not arguing the merits of the change. I'm arguing, I'm now responding to a to an aspect of that which was introduced to the subcommittee for the first time after the concept had been broached and I think even tentatively adopted, which was the loss of these funds. Now,
you're going to go along with converting some of that prejudgment interest that the government's going to pay?
Well, am I mistaken? They thought there'd be 30 more people per year under the bill as originally drafted. We amended it, and now they're not concerned about those 30 patients more a year. Right? Are they also saying, but if you don't change the verdict, then we throw you back into a Ways and Means situation? I really mean that. I'm not trying to play words, but they started out saying it's going to cost, it'll be 30 more a year. Then they say the amendments got rid of the 30-year.
Their advice, their fiscal impact statement includes a reassessment. Well, it says, with the proposed amendments, the bill will not increase forensic unit population.
However, the division's revenue will be reduced because patients convicted under this law cannot be billed.
If you buy their definition of the verdict. So they were first concerned about the 30 patients. That's one issue. That's been taken care of in terms of an impact. Now they're concerned about, right? I'm not trying to play words, right? Because they did that's that issue. So it's two different things they're worried about.
All that's left now, as far as the fiscal impact statement, is the loss of federal funds.
Possible
loss. Funds of federal funds.
Right.
I'm content to leave the subsequent referral issue open for the moment, but you know, based on that general fund fiscal impact thing, I
can write a letter to the federal government, tell them to stick it in their ear.
That's another thing, you know. Tell the feds we haven't done that yet here in discussions. The heck with it. But I realize that that's not.
I just don't want to change it this stage. The others want to do. I don't want to change it, but I don't know what the others want to do.
Let's send it on to full committee and resolve there.
That's what it has to be.
Bring the discussion of the bill as amendment. Lieutenant Courtney moves House Bill 2075 as amended to be reported to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Call the roll, please.
Hill?
Aye.
Yes.
Ballmer? Aye.
Miller? Aye.
Springer?
Aye.
Meyer? Aye. Okay. 2440.
Version that had been recommended by a number of the union tribes that had testified at the earlier April 7th meeting. also, we were consolidating House Bill 2440 with House Bill 2442, which was in another committee and was amending ORS 273705, because it was referred to in this bill and was being amended, and we thought that it would be a better idea to coordinate those two and have both of them before us. Also, there were attempts made to address some of the concerns that have been raised by individuals who opposed the bill. And in addition, there were a number of technical matters that we felt needed to be cleaned up. So we've tried to do that. I can walk the committee through the Hannah Gross version of the bill.
Yes, let's just take it section by section.
Excuse me, is Representative Agron's going to call?
He was here once.
Representative Agron's been called. Okay, thank you. Okay, section one of the bill at the beginning is some clarifying language, basically to clarify that it's the object that is to be at least 75 years old, not the indigenous or subsequent.
Where do you draw the line between what is, an archaeological incursion and what is has been a traditional, historically harmless hobby that people have engaged in? And suddenly I have a bunch of constituents who now perceive that there are these Hitlerian tactics in this bill relative to confiscations and all of these penalties and oh my God, it suddenly becomes a great horrible thing to pick up an arrowhead. I don't think that the folks who are my constituents are wanting to do more than continue to pursue what they consider to be a harmless hobby and not be a criminal thereby. And then secondly, there are those who have written books, have contributed to historic knowledge, who are not in that category of the qualified archaeologist who suddenly see themselves and what they consider to be years of good activity and leading to public education suddenly declared illegal and taken away from their capabilities. And I guess that's those approaches are the ones that my folks find objectionable. If I can be of any further assistance to you, I would like to be. I find the whole matter one of those things that I wish would go away, but it's here and we have to face up to it.
Questions or comments for Representative Agrons?
Bernie, I think we did try to get copies of this Hannah Gross version to both Carol Howe and Chet Squire. Have you heard from either of them?
I heard from Carol. I don't know where that came out. I received a letter from him on May 10th. Now, is this subsequent to that? I think it is.
It
I don't
is.
Think he's seen it.
I sent out copies of this to Mr. Howe, Mr. Squires. Oh, they should have received exactly when I sent it out. They think it might have gone out last Monday, something like that.
Well, then I have not heard from them. 5/23.
5/23. Yeah, I sent it out to them, I believe, that same day.
Well, I've not had a response, nor have I seen that version either.
I'm sorry, I didn't collect the same one, and I apologize.
That's okay.
Further questions, comments for the representative? Representative Lombard?
No,
thank you for coming here today.
Thank you for listening, and I appreciate it.
You are now going to be given a copy, apparently, by Representative Lombard.
Thank you.
Well, committee, where are you? Can we move on to 2661?
No, Mr. Chairman, I'm not willing to move yet on 2440.
2661?
Fully my opinion.
Not that Representative Lombard has the last word, it's just that I don't know where the chair is, and he's still busy, and it's 5 o'clock, and well, I got the gavel.
5 o'clock, you left.
Now, this bill, Linda, you want to?
I remember we worked on this one. This was very interesting.
Yeah,
so we didn't close this.
Are you going to? Are you waiting for the chair to come back?
I'm waiting for the chair to come back.
Procedure is correct. Philosophies in there.
Is any movement there? I mean, why don't we? Do you want to move? Give them more movements. Linda, we.
Yes.
Was Representative Hill distracting you, Linda?
No, I was not.
Again?
Representative Courtney.
Okay, the last meeting on this bill, the committee adopted. This is the felony sex offender registration.
Oh, yeah.
Committee adopted LC amendments 2661-2.
Right.
I'm here. I know that part of that was to put the State Police Bureau of Criminal Identification in the role that the bill provided. It also adds a number of offenses using a child in obscene sexual performance, promoting an obscene sexual performance by a child, incest, felony prostitution to the list of felony sex offenders, sex offenses included in section 2 of the bill. There was a motion to terminate the provisions of the bill on July 1st, 1989 in concept. I don't have any, I have not submitted anything to legislative council yet for amendments to this bill. I can only say I don't know of any other instance. At least the public defender's office couldn't think of another instance in which a criminal offense has been established for a limited number of years from the outset. I mean, there could be criminal offenses, and then later the legislature moves to, you know, decriminalize something or change the penalty. But I don't know of any other criminal offenses that have been established. And this does establish a misdemeanor offense for failing to register. Anyway, there was a question of, a related question is what about sunsetting a criminal offense? And I guess that's a related question. The ex post facto issue came up as to those who were convicted before the effective date of the act. Right now, under section 3 of the bill, as far as required registration, it would apply to, in subsection 1, any person convicted after a particular date, which is to be filled in, of a felony sex offense or attempt to commit felony sex offense. Also, subsection 2, persons convicted before the effective date of the act would have to register within 30 days following the effective date of the act or following release from custody. I think at a minimum, the person would have to have received notice of the fact that they were required to register. There was one of the cases that the public defender's office had commented on to me was the case of Robinson versus California, which is 370 U.S. 660, a 1962 case. In that instance, they found that it was illegal to, this is a little bit different than the ex post facto nature. I'm sorry, I'm to another tangent, but in that case, the statute said that you couldn't make a criminal offense of a person's status. There was a statute that said that if they could prove you were a heroin addict in that case, you would have committed the crime of being a heroin addict. And they used an Eighth Amendment cruel and unusual analysis. I think the reason that they gave me that example of a case is that it's analogous. It is not exactly the same. In this case, we'd be punishing the conduct of a person by failing to register. So it is somewhat, I mean, it's somewhat alike, but distinguishable possibly on the fact that there is somewhat more than a status involved. In fact, the person would have to not take an action, you know, not, by not registering and be subject to a criminal charge. But there's some analogies. I think there's a number of questions of constitutionality. I haven't had time to do detailed research. The public defender's office said that if the committee felt like it was necessary, they would be willing to do more in-depth research on any of the issues in the bill. Going back to the ex post facto question, I think I believe that if you, and again this is without extensive research, but it seems that if you could assure that you were giving people notice of the requirement to register, you may be able to get by the issue of penalizing a person for having had a status as a felony sex offender in the past. I guess I'm most concerned about the people who were felony sex offenders before the effective date of the act. It's one thing to say, here's this additional requirement to register for all these people who are felony sex offenders now or later. And then they've got notice, and it's part of the sort of requirement that they're going to be subject to at the time they commit the offense. The ones that I think are going to raise more questions, and I'm certain that there would be, I'm sure that it would be challenged on any of a number of counts that people will come up with, as far as persons who committed the offense prior to the effective date of the act. In sections 3 and 4, the committee also adopted them the date of October 1, 1984. There was also a question about the California law.
83.
Oh, really? A person, Forrest Reed, who is doing some research for us as time permits, and today he called California and spoke to a woman being shot in the Attorney General's office down there, and I can just give you some of the comments that they collected. As far as of July of 1982, they did have registered 62,500 sex offenders in California. Said that the basic point of it, and their law was passed around 1950-ish.
Jeez.
And they said basically it's meant to help law enforcement people to investigate, or use for their investigation purposes, and therefore thereby cutting some monetary costs to their law enforcement division. They did not apply it back to people. It was only people, you know, at the time and forward, as I understand what his comments to me. Also, there was a new opinion that upheld a cruel and unusual unconstitutionality finding on this registration as far as there was a time about soliciting in restrooms, or some activity that involved soliciting in the restroom was involved, and it was found to be cruel and unusual punishment to require this person to then register for life, which is what their registration provisions relate to. It didn't, and this is brand new, and they didn't, didn't have a case site, so if you want to know any more detail on that case, I would have to search further for it. It didn't speak to what time period in this instance would be an okay time period.
Is that a California federal district?
It's, it was
court?
A California
what
case.
Court?
I don't know which case. All I found out, this was from a telephone conversation today, was that it was just recently found unconstitutional in that instance to subject them to life registration.
Is there one more?
Well, I don't think my questions about transition problems, time period and what have you, and who would pick up notice have really been answered, but I just don't think that we can wait around because I realize the workload that, that we've got, and I guess, frankly, it'd be my thinking to repeal the provisions of the bill that require the registration of persons who are convicted and released before the effective date, but to make it apply simply to persons who are in custody on the effective date of the legislation and who are released thereafter. I think that's the only simple way to address that, that problem. Secondly, I don't know if we formally amended it to put in the five-year period, but it, I think all the parties were in agreement that the registration term period, that the record should be kept for a term of 5 years. It seems to me that that might address the problem that the recent California court decision may have overturned. So that's kind of what
discussion?
Did you make a motion?
All right, well, I'll move then conceptually that the bill be amended to require registration only prospectively for individuals. Back up. To apply to individuals who are convicted after October 1, 1983. Or who were convicted before October 1, 1983, but who are released from custody after October 1, 1983.
Your five-year amendment?
Yeah, I was looking. I just don't know whether the five-year was...
It was
withdrawn.
It was a motion made, but it was withdrawn.
Well, it was withdrawn because we had a sunset provision on it, I think. Right. That, but it would seem to me now we're going to see if this thing works and if we're going to apply it only prospectively. A five-year sunset provision is a bit short. Maybe not. I don't know. I throw it open for consideration. It seems to me we may have to have that five-year limitation in there, though. Well, I know what I want to say. I would rather put the five-year limitation in there for the time period that the record can be kept, because I am still concerned that if we put a sunset provision on this bill, that we may run into real constitutional problems in which we create a crime that is a crime only for a given period of time. This is no longer a crime beyond that period of time.
Does sound a bit normal.
Now, if we come down later and
well, then
and repeal it.
In lieu of that, you're describing what kind of limitation on the retention of the records?
That the record be kept for a period of 5 years from.
Is that absent any, you mean absent an intervening or rather subsequent offense which
yes.
would come within the ambit of the act?
Yes.
Linda?
Can I answer further clarification? Is that that a person would only have to, well, there's one thing about keeping the records, and the other is for how many years does the person retain an obligation to register? And if, do you mean the five-year period with that? I mean, let's say 4 years after I was convicted of a felony sex offense, I moved to a certain city and had to register. Could that city keep my records for 5 years from that date? And secondly, after the fifth year from the date I committed the offense, would I still have an obligation to register?
All right. Created a real quagmire here. Let's say, first of all, that following release from custody, I think that ought to be the triggering point. Following release from custody from the corrections division, an individual shall be obligated to be registered during a five-year period. And thus, if the individual on the fourth year following release from custody changes residence to a different city, the individual is still under an obligation to register. Further, that maybe that's all we need. I'm afraid if we step in and start saying on the other side of the coin that the cities or counties or wherever the individual resides can retain those records only for 5 years and 5 years only, that may not be a problem, except you're going to have, again, in the example, in the hypothetical, if you've got the individual who changes residence in the fourth year and registers with a new city, do we say that the new city gets to retain that record only for one year or for some other time period?
Discussion?
There's like some thoughts on that.
Well, what if you have a revocation proceeding, which is not uncommon? Would that extend the five-year period? Parole revocation?
Well,
it may be that notwithstanding the workload problem of the subcommittee, we might want to carry this to one further work session in order to give it time to develop more specific amendments. I think we'd be time ahead in the long run.
Well, I think so. I just would like to give Linda better instructions or directions as to what it's going to be, because
Mr. Courtney, does any state have a cutoff, Linda, that you're aware of? We know California does not have one. That's been declared unconstitutional. Do you know of any state that has a cutoff?
I didn't mean to say that California has been found altogether unconstitutional.
Okay.
It was in that particular instance. There has been other court cases, I think there was testimony on, that they haven't found that the statute had been upheld. It's just at least in this one instance of a certain offense, the life registration was unconstitutional.
Well,
I don't know about the other states. I'd have to look over the materials that I have.
It seems to me that if we can't be clean, that is perspective. We've got to go out of perspective. And we may not, and can't deal with it in terms of, and we don't have, we're unable to, we may not be able to get there unless we can go out prospectively without limitation. If we start bringing in the limitation things, it's gone.
as laudable as the idea is, but that's what I'm starting to see and sense in terms of the questions that Representative Springer's throwing out. This court down in California, I don't know what they've said down there, and that's the thing we got to get a feel for, because if we say it only applies for 5 years, and you get a, you know, we might do, you know, get through some loops and work that around, but then I suppose that, for the sunset, we got a problem there. We try to, so it's got to be simple. From this day forward, bingo, and can we do it? And do we want to make that kind of policy decision? Otherwise, that's all we can do.
Yeah, okay.
I really mean that, Mr. Chair, so I'm not trying to, I think that's the only direction to give.
Yeah, well,
it seems to me that we're going to need to settle this question of how open-ended the requirement can be, are we not? Is that the issue in the California case?
It was the issue as to that one particular offense, apparently, and I'm sorry, I haven't seen the case. I can call further and try to...
There's no objection. I think we need to focus on that question. And we'll pursue getting that opinion before us.
Well, can I ask this question, though, Mr. Chairman? And that is this, that if in the opinion of committee counsel we need some kind of limitation, can we go ahead and have some suggestions provided for us as to how that limitation would be framed to not only, you know, cover the question of how long do we require the individual to register, keep and maintain registration? What do we do in the event that a person who is released from custody but is on parole and parole is revoked? What do we do, thirdly, on subsequent offenses, subsequent sexual offenses? Do we treat them as a whole new requirement? That may be the simplest way to handle it.
I mean, if there were to be a limitation on the time period for keeping them?
That's right. Well, I would assume that if an individual is convicted of a new sexual offense within the initial 5-year period, they'd probably go back to Bukowski and it would be a whole new 5 years. The requirement would be continued. That probably is pretty easy to handle. I'm trying to think in terms of what kind of structural framework do we work with then if we have to have a limitation.
Can I point out one thing, other thing, that as I understand it, the offense where they found this life registration to be unconstitutional, as I understand it, is a misdemeanor in California.
Well, maybe
so
the
I don't
answer
know
to
whether
our...
that has made a difference.
I don't think we've included any misdemeanors. Felony sex offense. Yeah.
Further suggestions or directions to attempt to refine the bill, Representative Springer?
Well, I just had a question, Linda, about this idea of sunsetting. Are we still exploring that as an option?
I thought we had jettisoned that, but. Did you want to revive the kind
of... No, I didn't.
I believe it's died.
Okay. I'm not sure of any other statute of criminal nature that we tried to sunset.
Well, I think the more it was discussed, the more curious it sounded. Anything further, Helena? All right, the last bill, quickly before, and then I want to see if we can get... use the alternate closure on the archaeological bill. We've been carrying for some time the House Bill 2456, which was the bill introduced at the request of a variety of charitable organizations to increase the minimum or maximum token value that could be obtained under the Happy Canyon Act in order to augment the fundraising capabilities of the Happy Canyon type of arrangement for organizations that use it in part for their fundraising. It's been a while since the bill was before, so I don't know how much specific recollection the members have on it, but I would like to see if the committee or subcommittee is prepared to take action on it so we can either... Linda?
I'm sorry, I wasn't here at the beginning of your meeting. Did you remove from the table the bills in the subcommittee on the table?
Oh.
2075 is not...
I'm not sure I did for subcommittee.
This bill's on the table, 2440 is on the table, and
2661.
That.
Chair moves to untable 2440, 2661, 2456.
Is there an objection?
Okay. Very least, I'd like to move the bill on to the full committee even without recommendation.
So moved.
Representative Courtney moves House Bill 2460 be reported to the full committee.
Aye.
Without recommendation or with
due pass? Due pass.
Due pass.
Due pass recommendation.
Whatever you. 6-1.
First, for the discussion, call the roll.
First, Catholic Secretary. Yes, on the darn bill.
Bill?
Aye.
Lombard?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Aye.
Myers? Aye.
Okay. Finally, stack 5440. Chair was in front of a turn of laughing phone calls when you were concluding on that measure, and I understand no action was taken. I'd like to see if we can take action.
I'm ready to go. I know there are some questions. I'm not sure if the other members, if the questions are the nature that they can be resolved, or if it's just kind of a fundamental hang up with the bill, which I've been known to have on a few others, but I'm ready to go ahead with the bill as amended. And considerable effort. It may not be the greatest piece of art to emerge from the committee, but I don't think that's for want of effort on behalf of the proponents or counsel or those who try to deal with quote unquote the problem.
Representative Springer moves that House Bill 2440 as amended be reported to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Well, further discussion? I think perhaps my motion should be interpreted as adopting the amendments that were contained in this Hand and Gross version.
Pardon me. Yes, we had not had that intervening step.
I would.
The motion correctly stated is to adopt the amendments on the Hand and Gross version as distributed to the members. Is there a discussion?
Mm-hmm.
Is there objection to the amendments? Now, your other motion would be correctly stated as I did before.
That's
the Springer moves House Bill 2440 as amended be reported to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Mr. Lombard.
Just for the record, Mr. Chairman, I guess I come from that particularly sensitive part of the state, where I've had some of these private individuals who seem to feel that